Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy, part of Empire Media. Hey, Will T, Ray, real quick question.
Okay.
Yes, okay, you listen to me. All right, we're not going to really talk about it, but it's amazing, right, that now, you know, Bryce Harper is back in D.C. and it's not a store anymore. Like, do you think he, like, regrets leaving the area?
No. I think ultimately he got what he really wanted.
No World Series? Didn't he want to be a champion?
I mean, I'm sure he wanted to be a champion, and he signed a contract that was at the time for 13 years. So he, in his mind, he pretty much imagines that he will be a champion.
Mm-hmm.
That'll come true someday, but he got the contract.
He got the bag. That's true. That's facts. But still, though, you
know, not news because of him.
It's not news, though, right? It's amazing. It used to be news all day.
It's not news. It's not news because of him.
Oh, because of him,
brother. He failed to live up to expectations in Philadelphia. The Washington Nationals won a World Series title, and Fernando Tatis is probably the biggest star in baseball. He's not even close at this point.
Ooh, true. Hey, like I mentioned, we're part of Empire Media. So Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington football team insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the urban sports scene. Also, this show can be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options in local news, health, and of course, of the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget also to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T,
let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
We'll talk with Howard University's head golf coach, Sam Perrier. At 8:25, we'll talk about Russell Westbrook breaking Oscar Robertson's triple-double record. At 8:38, we'll talk about J. Cole playing in the African League. Also, finally, we'll talk about Canelo Alvarez, TKO, and Billy Joe Saunders Saturday night for the Super Welterweight championship, unifying the belts. But first, Ray Jeezy.
Yes, sir. Let's get it started. Our guest for tonight is a native of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and a fellow HBCU alum by way of Tennessee State University. Our guest's amazing resume dates back to his days as a collegiate golfer at the aforementioned Tennessee State, where he played under the guidance of Dr. Katana Stark, who made history of becoming the first woman to coach a men's Division I golf team. Our guest will go on to be named team captain and graduated with honors in 1992, which would set in motion an inspirational journey in the world of golf and beyond. Our guest worked as the director of the East Lake Junior Golf Academy in Atlanta, Georgia, where it was said that he, quote, used the game to help underprivileged children gain courage, confidence, and courtesy. This was in large part the inspiration for our guest authoring a book entitled Diamonds in the Rough, the shining success story of inspiration, faith, and hope in East Lake. Our guest will go on to achieve many accolades during a decade-plus coaching career that includes becoming the first African-American head coach at a Power Five conference university after being selected to lead the golf program at Michigan State in 2008. He's also amassed multiple Coach of the Year honors and helped lead Stanford University to a national championship in 2007. More than 10 of our guest's former players have played in the PGA Tour and PGA Tour events, which includes one player participating in the Masters. In addition to his countless accomplishments, our guest is more importantly a father and a grandfather. He is currently tasked with the honor of leading the Howard University as director of golf, Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, Mr. Sam Hurrier. Pleasure to have you, Coach.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being
on. We appreciate you coming on with us tonight, Coach Prairie. This is Will. I have one question to start us off. You've achieved a lot in golf, and golf has allowed you to, you know, travel the country and make history as the first African-American coach of a Power Five collegiate school. What does the game of golf mean to you, and what's your relationship with it?
Golf is actually my ministry. I mean, we talk about doing certain things, changing lives, affecting lives, trying to provide, you know, certain inspiration to young folks. But for me, golf has been my ministry. It's given me a tool where I've been able to reach into every different type of neighborhood, from rich, poor, you name it. It makes me almost feel like a Robin Hood in some respects. You know, you want to take what's out there and provide to those who don't have. And sometimes that's not just financial. That's just also opportunity and expertise. So golf in a lot of senses for me, golf is life in some respects. Mm.
I had a question, because, you know, just not familiar with the process. So how is, you know, the recruiting process, you know, within, you know, golf? And does, obviously, like Ray, like you were working with, how it's working with Steph Curry, how does that help in terms of the recruiting process as well?
Well, you know, the interesting part about it is the recruiting process never stops, number one.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going after players, I mean, the Stephen Curry name piece doesn't really play a part, to be honest with you, on the front end, because players know where they want to go as it relates to, they're looking for certain climates, or they're looking for certain situational setups at universities. But then the other pieces, from winning to the support we get from Stephen Curry as it relates to making sure we have a lot of the things we need, then that's where the recruiting piece benefits from his relationship. Because a lot of times at HBCU, you're already fighting a different battle anyway.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't even respect them, especially when it comes to golf.
Mm-hmm.
So you're fighting that battle. So to offset that, you know, my resume helps. Stephen Curry, one of the best, you know, athletes on the planet. What he's produced really, really helps. And then his brand alone really, really helps.
Mm.
So there are a lot of different mitigating factors as to how the whole recruiting piece takes shape. It's not just one thing. I think it's a bevy of things that they all play a part in making it, you know, making a dream come true.
Coach, so this is the first year of Howard's golf program after a long hiatus. Can you talk to us kind of what's been the process of getting the golf program restarted? And do you feel any pressure, you know, kind of, you know, taking, you know, getting the program restarted?
Great question. First, I answer that question backwards. Do I feel any pressure? Do I feel any pressure? No. Because the way I'm built is if I play to my strengths, the things that I know how to do and I know how to do well, and I've had success doing them, then the success will come. We proved that this semester. We've been together. We were together 10 weeks, and we focused on what we could focus on. We played to our strengths and our weaknesses, and had a lot of quick success. Building a team, a lot of times, I say a lot, it's like building Legos, but it's also like building a sandwich. It's like, you know, you can eat a sandwich with no bread, but there's no substance to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take your time. You literally coming to Howard 10 weeks ago, you had to literally put everything in place, from finding places to practice, coming up with workout plans, convincing your players that, hey, although everything is not together right now, it will be. Just keep trusting the process. And luckily, they trusted me to trust the process, and I had to trust them to also be diligent to help the process. It's not an easy task, and I think what really helps me is I've done this for so many years at different universities that it's easy for me to know what the program was lacking or what it needed in order to bring some things to fruition and help try to create that village to support us.
You spoke of some of the, I'm not going to say struggles, but some of the things that you said were hard, getting the program started. And because you have prior knowledge, it may not have seemed as hard to you as someone who's a total novice coming in. What has been probably with COVID, what's been the biggest difficulty of kind of help for you from a strategic standpoint to continue to grow this program?
I think one of the toughest challenges up front was to let people realize that we needed to support financially. You know, a lot of people, they saw Stephen Curry's gift and they were thinking, well, he just provided all the money for the program and that takes care of all of your needs. Mm-hmm. But that isn't true. That's not how that works. So the simple things, like just creating the simple things, convincing people that, number one, it is golf. Number two, it is relevant. Number three, golf is although it's not a revenue generator per se from a ticket sale perspective, it is a revenue generator for the university and bringing and attracting very qualified students, bringing additional resources, bringing some marketing and notoriety. So if you add all it together, golf definitely it definitely brings some, you know, some food to the table, so to speak. But yeah, I would say that's probably been one of the toughest things as it relates to convincing people. And then once people saw us get started and they saw us, you know, they saw that we had some success, then people were willing to get behind the program. I think a lot of people were just kind of waiting and see, you know, what would this look like? Mm-hmm. You know, would this be like going down to the boys club with your friends, just playing some pickup golf. And when they realized this was serious, then I think people said, hey, let's help these guys out. And then they realized that the guys were pretty good. And then at that point, it's like, okay, yeah, we really want to support the effort now.
So, Coach, it's been a while since 1992, man. I'm not trying to age you, but I'm just being honest. You know, a lot has changed in the world since you played collegiate golf. However, what are the similarities between the golf program back when you were at Tennessee State, which was, as I mentioned in my introduction, a historic program, in comparison to where you are now with Howard? What is still the same? I know the game is not changed much, or correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I'll tell you what, from the beginning of Tennessee State to now, it's not even the same. I mean, at Tennessee State, when I first got there, we absolutely had nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm talking about nothing. I mean, we were hitting, I'm not even exaggerating, we were hitting balls some days on the side of a football practice field, and the grass was up to our shins in height. We would hit them off of a hill that was about a 200-yard drop. So you would hit a ball, you thought you would hit it 150 yards. It would hit the pavement and roll an additional 600 yards. It was utterly ridiculous. I'm not going to lie. And then after about a year and a half of that, Coach finally put some things in place, and they became very nice after that. And so that was a great lesson for me. I was 17 when I went to school, so that was a great lesson for me, because coming here, I realized that from that knowledge, I knew what to put in place.
Okay.
I went out and tried to find some additional stakeholders who would invest in our program. And I'm not just talking financially. I'm talking about even time and energy and people. I picked their brains. And so I was able to do that on the jump. It didn't take a year and a half. So that really, really helped. I also think right now times are such that one of the biggest differences is for African-American golf, it's not like, you know, the gorilla in the room, so to speak. You know, people know that it exists now. Back in those days, people were saying, man, why you want to play golf? Nowadays, folks going out, you know, black folks are going out getting country club memberships, and that's becoming a number. So that's probably another one of the biggest differences.
Coach, you mentioned how golf is becoming more prevalent and more popular in African American communities. One of the golf courses that the first golf course I ever saw was Langston Golf Course and Driving Range in DC on Benning Road. There aren't a lot of places there aren't a lot of golf courses in predominantly African-American communities. How is someone that is, you know, someone that's African-American, young African-American child, if they're interested in getting started in the game, how would they go about it? Because it seems as if golf is a game of means.
Oh, good question. I think there are ways, though. You have a lot of youth programs. There are golf clinics, golf camps. There are a lot of ways you can do it. I mean, I still believe in the old adage of caddying. I don't think caddying is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I think if a young man is really interested and he wants to be around the game and learn something, go to one of the nice clubs in the D.C. DMV area and caddy. You make good money. You meet some really people with some influence. Plus, you might learn something about the game. But there are a lot of ways. You know, you have your youth programs out here, your first tees, your youth programs in Peach County. All these programs mm-hmm. are around the DMV area. So you can find the program. I think it's just once you find it, how are you willing to advance? Are you willing to put in the necessary time? That's the difference.
Mm. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. Right now, we're talking with Howard University head golfing coach, Sam Perrier, excuse me, on the line. So, Coach, I want to go back to recruiting back because I'm a big fan of recruiting, just recruiting kids in general, in all sports. But I hear you run a few clinics. Am I correct?
Yeah, I run a lot of camps.
Yeah, a lot of camps. Mm-hmm. So, what are some of the do you run any camps here in the DMV area?
Well, I'm actually thinking about doing one right now, June 16th.
Okay.
Up in PG County, I'm pretty close to having that nailed down.
Okay, awesome.
But other than that, I'm doing one in Ohio. I'm doing out in Phoenix. I'm doing in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing them in a lot of different places.
Okay, so is that a good route to kind of get familiar with some of these kids that you want to bring into bring it to Howard or kind of keep your eye on, or is there other processes?
Yeah. Yeah, those are always great. Those mm-hmm. are always great ways. I give you a perfect example. When I coached at Stanford, we had a team full of 8 players. Well, 4 of those players that were campers as kids. They had come to our camp as kids.
Mm.
So you'll be surprised. Kids that are serious, they'll come when they're young. You know, at Michigan State, I had a kid come to my camp. He's a young boy, middle school kid. Well, guess what? He just graduated from Michigan State this year. He's at number one golfer.
Awesome.
So that happens. I mean, mm-hmm. if your kids are interested, and he was actually an African American kid.
Wow.
So if your kids mm-hmm. are actually interested, going to these camps is not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. All right, Coach, I want to switch it up to discussing one of your players. Gregory Odom Jr. There was an article written about him in the Undefeated on ESPN. He won the PGA Works Collegiate Championship a few weeks ago. What does his win do for you, for your program, as you continue to build continue to bring light on Howard University's golf program?
Well, all his win does for me is it validates what I told him when I recruited him.
Mm-hmm.
When I recruited him to come here, I told him, I said, if you come here and play for me, G, if you come here and play for me, you trust the process. I've had guys that have won, played at different levels. I said, you will, number one, you'll be a winner. Number two, you will get opportunities that you never dreamed of. And number three, you will walk away with something that'll change your life. I told him that before he ever got here. And so sure as my name is Sam, he won that tournament.
I like that.
Now, he won that tournament. Now he's gotten some opportunities that are coming this summer, which are just unreal. I mean, and it's just life changing type stuff. It's stuff that you dream about as a little boy when you're out in your driveway and you're holding that club, saying, "Man, if I hit this chip right, I'll make the Masters.
Mm.
If I hit this shot right, I'll win the U.S. Open." Those are the type of opportunities that he will now have an opportunity to be exposed to. As a result of even winning the PGA Works event, he's going to get a start in a Korn Ferry PGA Tour event. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. That's
amazing. Absolutely
and so,
amazing.
And so for me, it just, his win only validated what I told all the guys. And I told him he's the first guy I recruited. And he and I told him, I told him I needed him to come here. And as Stephen likes to say, I needed him to be that North Star for me to serve as that beacon, because I figured you get that one lion in, you can get the rest of the pack to follow.
True.
That's literally how I look at it. And so, you know, now we didn't win the PJ Works. I mean, we had a shot. We played great. We outkicked our coverage, in my opinion. We played over our ability for the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Those guys are right now already working hard for next year. And that's what it takes. You know, but Greg is a special player. I mean, I'll be honest with you. His golf IQ is one of the highest I've ever been around at any university.
Mm.
Wow.
And that's what, to me, that's the most incredible thing. His golf IQ is through the roof. And so what we have to continue to teach young black kids around the United States, we have to keep putting things in front of them that are going to educate these kids. You know, not just equipment, not just golf experience, playing at great events, understanding all the different nuances and that go with the game that are going to help you be special.
So, Coach, we've really been emphasizing the importance of valuing our HBCUs, which I feel as though, in terms of athletics at least right now, is growing in prominence. You see the ESPN specials on football. You see the coverage of Deion Sanders at Jackson State and NBA All-Stars tribute. But in my eyes, and this is just me, I want for all people to see the value in HBCUs. So what's your vision moving forward? Like, even if you had a team that had blacks, Asians, whites, I think that's cool, because I think the HBCUs in terms of education are great as well. What is your vision of how to just continue to transform the Howard University Golf Program?
Well, that's actually what I mean. You basically just took my answer, because I actually believe in what you just said. I think there should be an incredible level of diversity on the Howard team. I want a lot of black players, but I also want some diversity. I want if it's a couple Asian players or a couple South Africans or whatever it is. I mean, I want players from all over the world. I want black kids too, but I definitely would love to have players from all over the world. And I think that the HBCU plays even more important now than ever before, a really important role in the lives of our young youth. I think it plays a huge role, not just athletically, but also academically.
Coach, I know that we're coming up on time. I have one question for you, one question left for you. Who is the most famous person you played golf with, and how much money did you take from him?
the most famous person I've ever played golf with? Well, I'll put it this way. On paper, the most famous. It depends on how you define famous, but I mean, I would have to say, I mean, if it would have to be somebody like Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, maybe.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow.
That would be one. That would be a great one. but in my eyes, I would say one of the most famous people in my mind that I've ever played golf with was my dad.
Oh, man.
My dad was the best golfer I knew. He could flat out play. I mean, I've seen him shoot 64, 65. He could play. So that being the case for me, it's based on how we define famous.
Yeah.
But on paper, we're talking about TV and all that kind of stuff. I play with a bunch of people that's in movies and TVs and all that stuff. But yeah, I would say my answer would have to be my dad. Wow. That would have to be my answer.
Right. Real good answer. You know who should play though? You should play Will at Top Golf. Will's a great golfer, for what I hear. Hey, Coach. Thanks for being on the show. Is there anything you would like to add before we let you go?
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having us. I think I want people in the DMV area to understand. I mean, we're looking for the best and brightest. We're looking for top talent. If they want their students, if they want their young people to be successful, if they want them to have a chance of doing some special things, I'm telling you, if they're really interested in that, I mean, they need to call me at Howard. I mean, they need to talk. I mean, because we're going to help make that thing come true. Right now, we're doing some good things. We could not have done any of it without Stephen Curry and his support. None of it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, one thing I really love about him is that he's encouraging, he's pushing. He's like, hey, coach, you know, keep it going. And we're able to talk through different things, and he encourages the kids on the team. And I just think it's turned into a family. I mean, I consider Stephen and what he's done with his team to be a part of our Howard family. And I look like we're all a family right now. Mm. I feel kind of weird answering that last question, talking about Condoleezza Rice, because I don't want to leave anybody. I mean, there's so many famous people I've played with. I mean, that's kind of different. I mean, you know, from the Chris Tuckers to the Stephen Currys to play golf with all those folks. So, I mean, it just really depends. But in my favorite foursome, if it had to go down in history, in my favorite foursome, I would love to have a twosome, and my dad would be in that foursome. Mm. Yep.
Awesome stuff. You know they thought you was going to say Tiger, though, because you got the Stanford connection. That's what they were looking for. That was a question.
I did kind of think about it. I thought he was going to say it. I thought so, too.
That's why.
I asked him, I wasn't trying to lead him.
If that's the case, I'll tell you one of the coolest garbage friends I've had, if that's the case, was I had a chance to go heads up and hit some shots head-to-head against Tom Watson.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was one of my. I would say that was probably that was fire.
All
I mean, that was a ton of fun, and I did it in front of 500 kids, and we went shot for shot. So for me, that was. But I've had a lot of fun times like that. I mean, I had Jack Nicklaus give my son a golf lesson. I don't know what's better than that.
Mm.
So I've been blessed.
Wow.
I've been
that's
really
dope,
blessed,
man.
Absolutely, man.
I've been blessed.
We'll love to have you back on. We see the success coming. It's already started.
And we'll share.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for the support. Let me know. I love to be back on the show. I'm already a fan of the show, so definitely.
Oh, most definitely. And we're going to share. We're going to share any content you have on social media. We're going to share. We're going to try to spread the word.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. That was awesome. That was dope, man. I loved it a lot. Again, I get credit to people who make things happen. Ray Jeezy gets the credit for that always, man. Hey,
absolutely.
You know it. Hey, Russ is officially the triple double king. We'll talk about this after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports, same for ages. You dig? Deuces. What it do? I'm your homie Wole with the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media, and I'm here to tell you about Monkey Knife Fight. Monkey Knife Fight is the fastest growing sports gaming platform in North America, while being the third largest daily fantasy sports platform. It's easy to play. Users don't have to spend all day analyzing salary caps and lineups like other daily fantasy sports sites. It also offers all the major sports plus UFC, golf, esports, soccer, college basketball, NASCAR, and much more. Plus, users won't compete against thousands of professionals with algorithms like other daily fantasy sports sites. That crap could be annoying. Monkey Knife Fight has various jackpot contests such as Home Run Derby, which is the MLB $5,000 jackpot on Fridays, and Eagle Eye, which is the PGA $2,500 jackpot on Thursdays. Sign up now and get your chance to win the bag. Go to www.monkeyknifefight.com. Again, that is www.monkeyknifefight.com. And don't forget to sign up using the code URBAN. Again, that's URBAN. That's URBAN, URBAN. Hey, help me make you great. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy, part of Empire Media, AmpireMedia.com.
Last night, as the world is already aware of, in a very close loss to the Atlanta Hawks. By the way, fellas, my blood pressure has not been right because of the Wizards. Every game is coming down to the wire, last possession. it's so exciting to watch, and I'm a fan. That's why I guess it's different for me. Y'all like whatever, but nonetheless,
yeah.
Russ, of course, Russell Westbrook recorded his 182nd triple-double, passing the Big O to become the all-time triple-double doubles leader. Which, by the way, people saying Luka might break it, so it may not stand forever. Yeah. But how special is this accomplishment considering the way the game is played in today's NBA?
I mean, if you take
it, no, Will, go.
No, go ahead, Will. No. I need to follow that. The order.
No, bro. Shut up, dude. I think first off, every triple double. I'm a firm believer that every triple double is a triple double is hard to get, regardless of what era you playing. So as a point guard, a guy who rebounds the basketball, who can score the basketball and can dish it off, I think you know it should be respected and it should be looked at as a special record. I mean, every era is a little different in terms of how you play basketball and what's easier, whatnot, and I don't want to diminish anything. So what I will say is that getting a triple-double is just tough, man. It's a thing that, you know, I don't believe in the whole stats chasing or stat padding in terms of getting, like, rebounds. I feel like that's a effort play. So I don't care if people want to say, well, like, for instance, when he was in OKC, Steven Adams used to allow him to get rebounds. No, that's effort. Like, it's an effort play. So I don't believe in that. So I think him getting that many rebounds and being a point guard who can rebound like that, it's impressive. So to me, respect to Russ. It was a great record to achieve, a great record to break. And no one thought that record could ever be broken. I mean, people talked about this years ago and said this record was unbreakable, and he broke it. So kudos to Russ.
All right, I'll go. So I think with the way that the game has evolved and is played now with a lot of three-point shots taken,
mm-hmm.
it creates opportunity for long rebounds, which is why some will say, you know, a guy who played the point guard position was able to average a triple-double for, I think, what is it, three of the last four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, the amount of disrespect or the lack of celebration for this accomplishment is mind-boggling to me.
Mm-hmm.
In sports, I'm just going to be honest. In sports, to obtain a triple-double isn't easy, because if it was easy, the record, it wouldn't have been 50-plus years before someone broke this record. And to have a guy like Russell Westbrook accomplish this last night in Atlanta against the Hawks, and for the game to kind of keep going without them taking a moment to acknowledge this kind of unicorn milestone for an NBA player is crazy to me. Now, I don't know if it's because it was Russell Westbrook. I don't know if it was because it was a Monday night game between the Hawks and the Wizards. But it's crazy to me the lack of coverage that this is getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those records that no one thought would be broken for a very long time, but Russell Westbrook, the way he plays the game, the level of effort that he puts out there every night, now it may not always translate to his team winning games or winning championships, but for him to not, for him breaking this record and not to be celebrated, to me is crazy and disrespectful.
I think it's been celebrated. It's just, think about this, Will and Wole. If we're in a time where the arena is crowded, and let's say we're in Washington instead of Atlanta, I think that happens, Will. Yeah. I remember early this year when John Wall came back to Washington, there was a tribute played, and there was nobody at the arena.
Yeah.
It seemed as though nobody paid attention. We were like, you know what? This wasn't the right time to do this.
Yeah.
And I feel like Russ will still be celebrated. I just feel like right now, nothing's the same, although I get where you're coming from. But in part, though, you might be right, because there are times where a guy's reputation unfortunately hurts them, and Russ is the victim of that, because right now we should just be celebrating a man's accomplishments, but instead we're also having questions about his jump shot, about his attitude, about why he hasn't won a championship, about did he run KD out of Oklahoma City. It's been so many questions aside from just celebrating the accomplishments. So Will T, although maybe I don't agree with the way it was celebrated, I agree with the fact that it's been diminished a bit because it's Russ.
Yeah, but I'm going to say this, though, to Will T's point. This is one thing I think that even though again, like it's different times. So I agree to a certain point, to a certain extent. But I will say this, like once he broke that record, game should have stopped. And they still had people in the in attendance. Like you still had people there. So let people appreciate it. With the it may have been thousands of people, but still give them the opportunity to cheer this man for breaking that record. It is a record that we talk. If look at baseball, we talk about the home run record. It is a record almost as high as that. This is a record that no one thought that would be broken. It's not. It's like scoring. Like we all look at who could be the person to score 100, but it's the record. But no one thinks someone can actually do it. When Kobe got 81, folks was like, "Oh snap, he got 81." This is a record that no one ever thought would be broken. And when you look at it that way, I think you have to stop and give that man acknowledgement just for that 1 second. Like I don't care. I know we're in a different time where you can't pack an arena, but at least you with the people that were watching the game, stop the game and just let them cheer this man on. Like so, because if LeBron, but let's be real, if LeBron breaks the record, broke the scoring record, right? Even with 1,000 people in attendance, you don't think they're stopping the game? You don't think they're stopping to cheer LeBron?
Hell yeah, they are.
That's what I'm saying. Like this record is historic. Like it is a historic record. Like I remember thinking to myself, watching Jason Kidd and even watching Magic, watching Grant Hill. These are dudes were getting triple doubles, and I was like, yo, like triple doubles are hard and they weren't even close. This dude got 182 triple doubles. Regardless of what era, like this dude should have been cheered third. Like he should have been, you should have stopped play and gave this man the attention. Truth be told, you should have put the game on TNT and made a special event or ESPN just because it was the game that you knew he could get a triple double. It should have been exactly, all eyes on him.
And that's what I mean, right? When the Warriors won 73 games, right?
Yeah.
They made sure that game was on ESPN. They made sure that that they would break in, even on other
other networks,
news channels. Mm-hmm. They would flash the score. They would break into the game at times to show you pieces and snippets of the game. I mean, shoot, even Kobe's last game when he scored 60, they did the same thing. Now I don't know for a fact, but I didn't see like ESPN, they have like a breaking news on their website showing that Russell Westbrook
I don't think that we could have seen a special like following the chase, because the Wizards' record is what it is.
But I get that.
I'm not calling for all of that, but at least at the bare minimum, that's a historic moment. You should have paused the game, taken that basketball. They should have stopped play.
Yeah, this is
put that basketball to the side, and they could have either given him the option of having that basketball, or they should have sent that basketball to the Naismith Hall of Fame. Just saying.
Yeah, it's just not a regular milestone. You treated it like a regular milestone. I guess that was my issue. Like you treated it like that record should be appreciated thoroughly. Like no one gets triple doubles that easy. Real talk. Like easy. 182 times, man. Like, come on. Like regardless of go ahead, Will. Sorry.
Think of all the great players in the history of basketball, right? Some of the players that we think are, and I know we're out of town, so let me wrap this up. Yeah. But one last point. Think of all the great historic players who played this game. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Wilt, Dr. J, LeBron, all-time legends, and they weren't able to accomplish what Russell Westbrook accomplished. That's all I'm saying. It just needs to – I just thought it should have been far more celebrated than it was.
Yeah, that's man. Basically, we use this term. Just give Russ his flowers, man. Like, that's all. Appropriately, dude. Give him his flowers.
It's going to come down to him and CP3 as a debate for who's the best point guard of this modern day era. Watch what I tell you.
I still think it's CP3, but that's a whole different argument, though. But,
all right. Yeah. I'm leaving that.
Hey, Joe J. Cole is hooping in the inaugural season of the Basketball African League. We'll talk about this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Light skin, brother.
I keep my head high. I got my wings to carry me. I don't know freedom. I want my dreams to rescue me. I keep my faith strong. I ask the Lord to follow me. I've been unfaithful. I don't know why you call on me. This is my canvas. I'ma paint it how I want it, baby. Oh, this is my canvas. I'ma paint it how I want it.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Ampire Media. And again, that's ampiremedia.com. All right, so J. Cole is expected to play for the Rwanda Patriots. That's a funny name. In the inaugural season of the Basketball African League. Actually, they're playing against Nigeria, too. He's playing against Nigeria in his first game. Thoughts?
His album comes out Friday. I'll give you my thoughts then. The album's fire. Go ahead and go play ball. If the album isn't fire, I'm going to say you need to stick to your day job. Go back into the lab.
Look, man, what kind of attention could this bring for, like, you know, the league? Or, you know, yeah, the league. The African League. Having J. Cole there.
I mean, go ahead, Ray.
I thought you were going, brother.
Nah, brother, it's on you.
I'm not sure if this necessarily helps. See, while he's a good basketball player, like many don't know, he had the chance to play college ball, but he chose, obviously, to pursue his music career, which worked out for him. And he's one of many rappers / hip-hop artists who have a background in athletics. I mean, Cameron comes to mind, who is one who also used to hoop. The Game, who in the Drew League, he kind of sucks. But I don't know if we've seen enough of J. Cole lately to really get excited about it. I think in Africa, it's probably a big deal, man. And that's the most important thing, is you want to get the attention of the people that you're going to be, you know, entertaining and performing for, and that you want, and the audience that you're looking to see. So in terms of it being a big deal there, I think it's great, but I don't think it will translate to the States right away.
Will, you want to say something? Because you and Ray were kind of battling for
No, we can't necessarily battle.
We're talking about J. Cole. We got to talk about battle.
Put your feet in. Put your feet in, Will.
No, it's. I think it'll bring some, you know, it'll bring some awareness, spotlight to that league. But ultimately, if J. Cole goes down there and sucks, I mean, you know, no one's going to care. But if the album is fire, classic album, and then he goes down there and he drops 30 per game, it's over.
Man,
2021 will be the year of J. Cole.
J. Cole's been hooping, man. He's been working out with I forgot the dude on Instagram. He'd be working out all the NBA players. And dude be – J. Cole's – his IG vids look like dude be going. And he's always hooped pretty well, respectively well in these all-star events. So he can hoop, and like Ray mentioned, he could have played ball as a walk on at St. John's, but like Ray said, he decided to go the music route, and it was, you know, the best decision. It was the best decision for him, obviously. So, but I think it would bring a lot of attention. It's good that it would bring attention to Africa, bringing attention to the league. The NBA itself has done so much in terms of helping, fostering a good environment in terms of playing basketball in Africa and most of the African countries. So I think it's just something to piggyback on, you know what I'm saying? So just to bring more awareness to trying, you know, playing basketball, making that an option for some of these countries. And you know, Messiah Jerry, we know that in Toronto, he's pretty much big on it and bringing, you know, trying to, you know, bring over African talent over here to the United States. So I just think that, you know, having a, regardless of his actual profession, but a guy who is skilled in playing ball and who is popular because of his music, you know, maybe will influence some, you know, some kid who is looking for a different route to maybe, you know, help his family or her family to make money playing basketball and maybe transferring over here to try to fulfill the dream.
All in the dream. What's about? I mean, obviously, we don't have anything else.
I know that's right.
Obviously, we don't have anything else to say during the segment.
I know, right?
So, having said that,
no, what's the album though? I want to know about this J. Cole album because I don't really listen to J. Cole that much. You know what I'm saying? The album supposed to be.
Oh, J. Cole, his albums in the past have been great. Mm.
Yeah, it's been amazing. That's why I'm looking forward to it Friday.
Friday. Are you getting it the right way?
Midnight Friday.
Are you getting the right way?
Hmm?
You getting it the right way?
Of course, Wole. I pay for all of my music. What are you talking about?
I said the right way. All I said is the right way. That's all I'm saying. Like,
I'm just saying, Wole.
Yeah.
I pay for all of my music. What are you talking
about?
Look,
man, we're talking African.
I know nothing.
Look, we're talking about African and corruption and music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I look for corrupt. You know, the whole corrupt circle of everything in life. It's the corrupt circle of life.
Having said that, Canelo Alvarez, TKO, Billy Joe Saunders in the 8th round of Unified Super Middleweight title. We'll talk about this after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Ampire Media, and that's ampiremedia.com.
All right, Saturday night, Canelo Alvarez, TKO.
Oh, Billy Joe Saunders in the 8th, winning Saunders WBO title. Canelo is now the WBO, WBA, and WBC champion. What are your thoughts on the fight? Ray,
I'm glad I'm going first because I just want to say this to you guys. We need a pop-up show, by the way. So when stuff happens like this, we can have live post-fight reaction. You know, it's Tuesday now. And I watched my man Johnny Sig, though. You know, at least we got to support our brother. Shout out to him. His co-host was high as a kite, by the way.
I'm not surprised.
He was on that Oscar De La Hoya.
I am not surprised.
hey, listen, though. But I'm mentioning my man Johnny Sig. First of all, thank you for coming on last week. But second of all, they mentioned what everybody else mentioned, which was the most important thing, is that the fans made the fight. Like 73,000 people packed Cowboy Stadium to watch this fight. That was amazing. We're getting back to a place where fans are now allowed back in sporting events, and I think it's dope. And Canelo Alvarez, clearly the biggest draw in boxing. I don't think there was any doubt in anyone's mind outside of Chris Mannix, whose car was crazy.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with him?
Probably Tyson Fury, that Canelo wasn't going to win this fight. Billy Joe Saunders, I want to say he fought about 2 good rounds. That was all I saw.
Yeah.
But we know that Canelo is still the biggest draw, pound for pound. He did his thing. I can't wait till we discuss what he should do next. That's what I'm excited about.
I mean, I would counter that I don't think Canelo is the biggest draw in boxing.
Who?
Paul brothers. It's Ryan and Logan Paul. They're the biggest problem.
Ryan. Ain't nobody named Ryan Paul.
Oh, man. Jake, don't get me started, dude. Man.
Jake.
Don't worry, Will. Will, exactly. Will, I'm the same way with you, bro. When you said it, I was with you because I ain't know who the hell. I don't know who the hell they are, for real.
Exactly.
But yeah, like, to me, Canelo was the reason, man. He's just the biggest draw in boxing. We saw what he did. With Texas Stadium, we saw what Earl did with Mikey Garcia, and just in comparison to what Canelo did with just Billy Joe Saunders. And I'm like you, Ray. I probably gave Saunders 3 rounds. I mean, if that, but it was a lot of kind of ifs. But I know, I mean, I had it 5-3 before he stopped. He did some good things, but it's just that when you watch Canelo, it just it's just like watching a fight in person. I mean, watching a fight when some, you know, people just, you know, like fighting outside and you see a fight in the street or whatever. One dude just is throwing punches that actually look like it hurts. Like every punch that Canelo threw to Saunders, it looked like it hurt. Like the punches that Saunders were hitting, yeah, they were nice combinations and everything, jabbing and whatnot, but it just looked like everything Canelo threw hurt. Like he went to the body, it hurt. When he hit him up top, it hurt. You know what I mean? So he's a violent puncher, and he can just walk through punches. I'm always amazed every time I see Canelo, and you know, some of the hate he gets about, oh, he's not that good. Who did he fight? But you look at his resume, speaks for itself. The damage he's done, you know, you can argue the Triple G, what your cards were. I mean, I thought those fights were relatively close. I don't think it was robbed. You can say that he got robbed because it was a close card. If you have a close card, it can go any which way. When you're looking at Canelo, I just think that, yeah, he's the best in the game right now. Like, I don't think that, you know, and I love Earl. I'm an Earl. Everybody knows I'm an Earl dude. I've stated that I think Earl is probably, you know, at the time, I thought Earl was the best. When you look at, you know, resume and what this dude has done, I don't think you can really dispute it.
Oh, man. You said a lot that I could unpack, but I'm not going to do that right now. I'm just going to say this. Just to add, as far as you talking about Canelo's punching power, what impressed me most is Billy Joe Saunders had all this hoopla made of the ring size, right?
Yeah.
And it was clear that he wanted to use it to run because Canelo was stalking him the entire fight, walking him down. And that's what you love about a champion like Canelo when they bring the fight to the challenger. You know what I'm saying? Versus it being the other way around.
Yeah.
And he continuously just pressed. And it shows the level of conditioning that he's in. People try to bring up, you know, performance enhancing drugs. Man, forget about that. Canelo, like I said, right now, Will T, anybody can tell me different. He's the biggest draw, and he's pound for pound the best boxer until somebody dethrones him. And hopefully, it'll be on the PBC side. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, man. All right, so who would you – I'm going to ask the question there because I know Ray's biting at the tongue. Who would you want to see Canelo fight next, man?
I'm gonna tell y'all what I said. I'm gonna tell y'all what I said during the break.
All right,
not necessarily answer your question, right. But then again, it is. He should sign a 3-fight deal with Al Haymon and PBC, fight Caleb Plant first, Jermall Charlo second, and David Benavidez third. And I believe he'll come out of that 2-1, and we'll see the passing of the guard.
2-1.
There you go.
The 2-1. Who's the one?
Oh, Benavidez. I think Benavidez. 3 fights. Remember, that might be what? In boxing, that could be a year and a half to 3 years from now.
Well, for him.
So we could see
for him.
We could see David Benavidez be an even better fighter. Remember, he's only what? David Benavidez, he's 22 or 23. He's young.
Yeah.
I think that he's talented enough to dethrone Canelo Alvarez. But I think Canelo Alvarez easily beats Caleb Plant. And I think that while Jermall Charlo, I love the Charlo brothers. I like Jermall even better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Canelo beats Jermall as well.
I think that's a great plan, Ray. But I'll just say I'll just add one caveat to that. I don't think that the Charlo brothers, either one of Jermall Charlo, if I'm not mistaken, would want to go up to 168.
Mm-hmm.
And Canelo has already stated that anyone who wants to fight him would have to come up to 168 to fight him.
Which makes sense. Mm. I mean, which makes sense. He's the biggest draw. It makes sense.
They've been calling him out, though, Will.
They call out for years. Everybody calls everybody. They always call him out. But he's right,
and,
though.
And look, look what happened in his post-fight interview.
Oh, my God. I saw it.
I forgot his name.
Who is that dude?
Andre, yeah. No, he's
Dimitri?
He's the champion. Yeah, Dimitri Andrea. He's the champion at 160. Right, he's a guy who's I believe he's undefeated. Mm-hmm. But excuse me, if you watch his fight, they really aren't that interesting, or there's not a lot of action.
Mm-hmm.
He's very tactical. He doesn't necessarily punch that hard. He's not a heavy-handed boxer who goes for knockouts. He goes for the win. He goes for the style points. In my opinion, and he went and he approached on Canelo post fight. Canelo, he was up there, as he should, you know, kind of taking his victory lap, talking to the media, and then Dimitri Andrea just came in interrupted the press conference, and for the first time ever, I heard Canelo speaking English.
That wasn't the first time, but yeah, he was going ham speaking English though.
English sometimes.
But I know Will said that's the first time indeed, like that he went in English. Like he went in English. I was usually it's like a one liner. It's like a one sentence.
It was hilarious to hear him talk like that was hilarious. Get the fuck out of here!
Oh,
hey, listen. Canelo, he's done some interviews in English. Actually, he showed a tour of his house and his cars, and he did it all in English. So he's capable. But when he's kirking out in the U.S.,
he
always turns to his English. Man, that's how you know he's. Bro, that's how you got him.
You know he's street. English, but bro, all I can say, his response, you know he's street. Like that was all that little baby face, redhead. That dude and that and
was
that
hilarious.
Thing.
More than it being street, it was hilarious.
I'm gonna tell y'all.
If he showed that side of him more.
Oh, he would sell even more, bruh. He would sell even more.
And I'm not saying he has to be vulgar.
Yes.
I'm not saying he has to be vulgar. Arrogant. I'm just saying he shows that more of that comedic side, you know, not as serious all the time in some of his post fight interviews.
Nah.
He would have a more additional fans to his fan base.
I thought he was. I just like how he carried, dude. It's just that it was like you're not even good. Like I'm being PG-13 with it. He's like you're not even like he went ham. He's like you're not even good. Like why are you in here? Like you won't even let me celebrate my day. Like let me celebrate my day. You know what I'm saying? And then all of a sudden, when dude kept talking, he was like you're a bum. Why are you here? Oh my God, dude was like, it was amazing, man. It was. I thought that was the funniest thing in the world. I was like, Canelo, you are going in, like for real. But
breaking news, guy. Breaking news.
What's up?
Triller just announced that.
Oh God.
Bradley Beal will be fighting Kent Bazemore in September.
Oh, that's another thing. That's another one too. Can I talk about that real quick before we leave the show?
Go ahead if you want to.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I'm done.
I really do. Hey, one, yo, Bradley Beal, like, don't put that, you don't need that kind of energy, bruh. Not in Bazemore. Like, after the first couple, like, lines, like, you let them know you here, that's cool. But he dragged that thing out throughout the whole night on Twitter, dude. Him and his girl. Like, we're talking about Bazemore.
I mean, he's passionate.
Bazemore?
He's passionate, man.
Like,
he's
we talking about Bazemore, bruh. Like, and you know he going to side with this dude.
We talking about Bazemore.
Yeah, we talking about Bazemore. Like, we're not even talking about Steph. We talking about Bazemore coming, saying that something about his hamstring because he's running around. He's running so hard to get the scoring record, and Steph's still out here doing his thing. Like, of course he's going to side with Steph. That's his teammate. Like, all right, he maybe shouldn't have used you to compliment Steph. Okay, whatever. But, like, you don't have to, like, you and your girl got to go that hard for, like, the whole night. Like, that's like, yo, you like a Don right now in the scoring game in the NBA, and you worried about Bazemore? Like, you should hit him with a one-liner to show you that you tough. Jordan ain't talking to, Liddell Echols? He's not worried about no Liddell Echols? Liddell Echols can say whatever. Jordan going to look at him like, all right, man, who Liddell Echols? That's it.
Nah, keep LeBradford Smith, you wrong, Wole.
No, did he say it, though? No, you're right, LeBradford Smith. You know what? Did he say it, though? He didn't say it that day. Like, I'm talking about it was after, it was like when he retired. I'm talking about he wasn't addressing LeBradford Smith that day on national TV, did he? I mean, on anything social or national TV, he wasn't worried about he wasn't putting it out there for people to see. Nah. Let it go, bro. Like, just give me a one-liner. All I need is a one-liner. Like, I'm going to torch this dude when I see him. And we're good. Come on, man. It's Bazemore. We're talking about Bazemore. Come on, Brad.
He's passionate, man. Look, he's passionate. He, you know, he wants his respect. The man. This is a man who historically hasn't gotten his respect for what he's done in this league. And to have someone like Kent Bazemore, you know, insult you.
I know, I feel you.
That's kind of like the ultimate slap and respect if you're Bradley Beal. Like, I'm Bradley Beal. I should have been on the All-Star team last year.
I know, I'm Bradley
Beal. I made it this year. I'm in contention for a scoring title.
Yeah.
I should be all NBA, and a guy like Kent Bazemore is going to go out here and try to defile my name in the public eye?
You're talking about. Man. And I feel you. We're talking about Kent Bazemore, though. Nobody's going to change that. We're talking about Bazemore. Y'all not going to make it seem like it's – come on, man. I know. I feel you, Bradley Beal, man. Bazemore came at you. It's whatever. Who did Kobe used to go at Smoosh Parker, but he used to do that joint like not in front of everybody. But it's cool though. Like I guess nowadays you can just go out anybody. Who cares? So you know it's Ken Bazemore. But shout out though, man. Bradley Beal, that joint was hilarious though. Him and his girl's a down. She's a down chick though. Real talk. Like she be going in. Like everybody should aspire to have a girl like her because she definitely got her man's back. Respect. Two fingers. All right. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Check out the home of The Urban Sports Scene, which is Empire Media at empiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire Media shows as well as other great content. We appreciate everybody for listening. Make sure you keep tuning in. Appreciate Coach for being on. It was amazing. Great content. Great work. Again, make sure y'all follow the Howard Bison golf program. Make sure you follow the Howard Bison sports athletic team. That's at Bison. I'm going to think it's at. Darn it. What is it? Ray, do you have it?
Yeah, HU Bison, baby.
Thank you. At HU Bison. Thank you. You saved my life, dog. At HU Bison. I think it's sports, though, right? Isn't it sports?
Well, they have multiple handles. That's what I'm saying. They got a golf handle.
Yeah.
Just check our Twitter page.
Just check our Twitter page. We got y'all, man. Check our Twitter page. We got y'all. All right, man. Anyway, you've been listening to The Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Michael, lead us out, big homie.